Hello, and welcome to another episode of Points of Point. So it's a daily-ish show where I go point to point. I am on my way to my commute, and let's do this thing. It is a beautiful, beautiful morning in New England, and as per usual, the weekend was also kind of nice, I guess. But the week is looking to be very nice, and we will all be trapped inside air-conditioned offices while the sunshine is nice and it is 70 degrees outside. So, there's always the problem with that. But hey, today I've got another batch of points. We'll see how many I get through. But the first one, it's kind of been in the back of my mind. I saw some folks talking about it online also, and it feels very weird that the Switch 2 comes out next week. As you may have learned from listening to some previous episodes, I am not participating in the Hunger Games that is getting a Switch 2. And I wouldn't call myself a Switch hater. I just am not a Switch needer currently. But it feels very strange for there to be like the next big Nintendo console coming out, and after the initial reveal, and like maybe a couple like a week or two after that of the April event, where we got to see Donkey Kong and the new Mario Kart, it kind of feels like hype for that thing has slowed down. And I think part of that is the kerfuffle around the around oh, there's just a Ferris wheel there, huh? That's new. Well, I think a lot of that is the kerfuffle around tariffs. Obviously, the pre-order chaos of them announcing a pre-order date and then in the US not getting one. I think there's just kind of been this weird feeling of like the price is very expensive, and if you're not kind of like a Nintendo diehard, the cost benefit on doing the Switch 2 is like kind of not in your favor currently. Like it is, it seems like from what everyone has said, it is like a fairly priced device for what it is, but I just don't really know how much I really want one of those. And it kind of seems like they're selling like gangbusters, but it kind of has the same feeling of like, okay, people put in their pre-orders, but it's almost like people put in their pre-orders as like, well, obviously I'm going to pre-order this thing, but not like, I don't know, I'm just not seeing the excitement for it, and maybe that's just there's not a ton of stuff out for it. Maybe that's just this continual like drum I'm beating about the incremental nature of games hardware now. But it just really feels like people got their pre-orders and they're kind of interested in what Mario Kart is, maybe to check out what the next couple Nintendo games are, whether it's the new Metroid or something else. But yeah, it just seems kind of weird that we're like 9 or 10 days away from everyone getting their Switch 2s, and most of what I've heard is pre-ordering was a nightmare. It kind of sucks to stand in line to not get anything. And as per usual, Nintendo has kind of just not done a great job of having an online pre-order service through their own website. And I don't know. Yeah, it just seems weird to me. It seems odd that this thing that and maybe this is just age too, like maybe as I am no longer a kid who can just absolutely obsess on whatever the next piece of hardware is, maybe I'm just checked out of that in a way I would not have been 15 years ago. But it just seems odd to me that this device is coming out. Everyone has been talking about this device for 3 years now, whenever the original Switch Pro rumors were going around. And then for it to be a week away, it just seemed like the hype has kind of just hit this calm where we're all just kind of waiting to to get the thing in the mail and then play Mario Kart. And like it sounds like Mario Kart is better and interesting and like an interesting take on what that game has been its entire run, but I don't know. It doesn't seem very it doesn't seem like the next coolest thing. Like I guess say what you will about the VR craziness when that stuff first came out, but there was like true hype and excitement around that. Like when the Rift came out for the first time, or like the dev kit Oculus were coming out. It's like this is like crazy, and it's you know m maybe not for everyone, and has limited use, but like it's cool. And I'm just not hearing that for the Switch. Like I'm just basically hearing that it's another one of those. Mouse controls seem like a gimmick. And that's kind of it. It's not even the Wii or the Wii U where there was the whole question of like, hey, they have this interesting paradigm, like new control scheme, new way of interacting with games. Like, what are they going to do with that? And I was kind of generally underwhelmed by Drag Cross Drive, Drag X Drive, Drag Times Drive. Like, it's an interesting concept, but it seems like the fun Nintendo Switch gimmick has just been turned into what can we use this in a Mario Party game for? Which is, again, kind of what has ended up becoming of like the PlayStation controller gimmick and the like Xbox, I guess also kind of controller gimmick, but less so. Yeah, it's interesting. It does seem like it is just leveling out and it has turned into like the Switch was the original Switch was check out this cool way to get indies in front of people who maybe don't have a PC that they want to throw stuff on. And now it's just, yeah, well, we made another one of those. Like the time to go. And it kind of feels like there are people who are super stoked about it, and then there's just kind of everyone else who's just, I guess, waiting to get it in the mail. But yeah, it's a weird thing to be this close to a major launch, like first one in 8 years, I think. And yeah, just we're all just waiting. Not a ton of hype, at least from what I've seen. Maybe I'll have friends that are absolutely stoked about this thing and it's going to revolutionize their gaming life. I would be curious to hear that, but it seems like the price thing has kind of put a damper on check out this cool piece of hardware. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just not in the groups of people who love Nintendo games, which is probably valid because I'm not a person who loves Nintendo games, you know? All right, second point. There is this game that I've been hearing word of. And I think it's called Tainted Grail, perhaps. And it is, I guess it is an Oblivion-like Elder Scrolls style first-person open world game, with the trappings of King Arthur world. And I love that. That's a fantastic concept. It's kind of perfect. Every time that there is a King Arthur flavor video game, I go into it and check it out. There are not as many as you would think there are, but there's like a pretty good tactics game a while ago that was kind of fun. But I love this concept. I have the demo downloaded. See last episode about my love for demos. And I will be checking this out. I will probably be making a video about it because it's like laser targeted to be a thing that I like. Weird thing about me is that I just absolutely love King Arthur shit. It probably started with the awful movie from the early 2000s. But I just generally love those fun myths, and how they are like adapted for other things, and how it's a fun mythology to have around. It's kind of like, I guess I don't know if this is true, but it feels like one of the more recent but still old mythologies of humankind, and I kind of like that. That's like a cool thing. And who doesn't like knights, you know? Knights and morality plays, that sounds fun. But I bring it up mostly because there has been this really cool resurgence. We kind of talked about this with Liza P last week too, but there's been this fun resurgence where I think people, like developers, have started realizing that, and maybe there's like something to the notion of IP that is important here, but there's been this plundering of public domain stuff. And I think that it's really smart. Like it's kind of a genius move to take something that has that's like purely public domain at this point and has cultural cachet, and you don't have to do this sounds like lazy devs, but just go with me on this. You can basically spend your time making something interesting and fun to play and innovative without having to do the intense work of world building from like step one. You can kind of like you can use a like cultural lexicon to say, okay, like we all understand like King Arthur's the good guy and he has a bunch of knights and there are all of these monsters that exist. And you see this, I mean this is not it's not public domain, but you see this with where Magic the Gathering is going to, right? Like Magic is yes, they are cashing in on your nostalgia and your love for brands, capital B, but they are also taking their game mechanics that are interesting and cool, and like they give like fun ways to play games, and then they are layering in an additional layer of known IP on top of that. Like if you are in the Warhammer space, if you like watch those Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings movies, like there is a Magic card set for you that is going to like give you something to look at. It's like, ah, yes, Magic the Gathering was very scary to me because the only people I know who play Magic the Gathering really play Magic the Gathering. But now, like, I can get the cards. What has Aragorn on it? And I know who Aragorn is, and that allows me to think about this game in a different way. And I think that that's kind of what we're seeing in video games too, with this like plundering of public domain stuff, because it also allows us as players to kind of go in with preconceived notions and then have that, like, you get to have your twist surprise, right? And it means that, like, oh, turns out, dang, King Arthur, he's the bad guy, probably. Or, uh-oh, Merlin, big scary wizard now, like, he's just a dragon. And that plays on what we know about this mythology, what we know about this world, and then it gives us like, oh, I know these characters, so what they are doing to them that is different is intriguing to me. And so it kind of it's I don't know, it feels like calling it cheating is not I don't mean it in like a negative sense. I mean it very much in a like especially as we talk about small studios like 1 to 3 person teams making these games, like ultimately some people are going to make games that cater to their strengths, you know, and most of the time those strengths are going to be code, or those strengths are going to be in writing. And then, you know, the other part that you under index in will be, you know, whatever we can put out. And I think that you can have like a cool twist on an interesting IP in that kind of way. Like even, you know, you look at the Frogwares mystery games, and they're all Sherlock Holmes, and there are like they go through some of the mysteries of Sherlock Holmes. Some of them are very, very much a Sherlock mystery that Conan Doyle could have written, and then there is The Awakened, which came out in like the first version of it came out, I think, in the early 2000s, And that's just fully a Lovecraftian horror game with Sherlock Holmes. And I think that there's a Neil Gaiman story similar to that, but like you're able to take things and kind of mash them together in interesting ways and like tell unique stories in that kind of way. Like the same thing with that like grim dark King Arthur tactics game, you know? That's telling a different version of the King Arthur mythology. And I think having even some cultural relevance is it can either be shocking, it can be interesting, it can be surprising, or it can just simply be familiar, which I think is also kind of nice. Like if there was just a full-blown retelling of the King Arthur mythos and you get to play as Sir Kay or something, that seems pretty cool to me too. You know, let me play through the Green Knight mystery and like put that in a fun new context of how you do that. Like you could definitely take these myths and these stories and tell them in a unique way that is, you know, transformative of the original work, but also kind of brings you in on it. And I think like King Arthur is one way of doing it. King Arthur is one way of doing it. Like there's like these cultural myths that are from much older that I think are maybe more ingrained in the cultural consciousness that we can use to as like shorthand for like morality plays and how to like have an interesting story with characters that we already know. And then I think there's also the maybe more recent and more common version or more, becoming more common version of this, which is taking those cultural icons, but literally from 1923. Like as copyright law in the US kind of ticks, the year ticks forward, more and more stuff is becoming public domain and accessible to people. So the most common one that you've probably heard of or at least seen is that black and white Steamboat Willie kind of it is giving Bioshock kind of because I think he like literally shoots bees out of his hands, but it's very much a in the cartoon style of 1920s Steamboat Willie, but also it's a first person shooter and it's like a cartoon shooter. And that's very silly and kind of a surprising twist on something that I think it could have been gross. And, you know, I guess can think about what a gross taking from Disney thing. Like, does that matter? No. But yeah, it could have been just like a, hey, look at this. We made a gruesome shooter and also it's Mickey Mouse. And you could get that for the shock value, and that's worth the $7 to say, look, I played the game that has Mickey Mouse in it. But it seems like they're doing something interesting with it. And this kind of leads me to the last version of this that I think is actually probably the best version of this that I've seen at least, and it's Lies of P. Like Lies of P, when that game was announced, and I was like, "Hey, look, it's a Souls-like, but you play as Pinocchio." It's like, "Okay, guys, like let's reel it in. This is going a little too far, actually. I think it is absurd that you have made Pinocchio Souls-like." And then that game comes out and it's great. And like they take the puppet thing and they do something with it. Like they take these public domain characters and they actually make a unique world. They, you know, they play on tropes of that story. Like you kind of know who Geppetto is and like what his deal is, but what they do with it is different. And I think like that's fun. Like I really like seeing how these games are going to take properties that continue to tick forward. Like Batman is coming up soon. Like original Batman, I think, is hitting public domain in the next couple of years. And like what does that look like? Like what is Action Comics number one version of Batman going to look like when people can just kind of do what they want free of DC's rules? I think that's always been the beauty of comic books is that, they can kind of do whatever they want for the most part. Like you can kind of, you get the chance to do what you want and play with these action figures, but they have to be within the guidelines. And now as more stuff becomes public domain, it's less that. Like you can kind of just go buck wild with it, which is kind of cool. And that kind of leads me to the thing that, when we were talking about the difficulty options in Liza P, the thing that I'm like actually super excited about is I think the post credits, I guess spoilers for Liza P, I think this is the post credit. It might have just been a trailer. But there's Wizard of Oz in there. Like as that is also ticking over into the public domain, Liza P will involve Wizard of Oz. And that's fucking cool. I love that. That's like such a cool way of, again, taking things that we know and that we love and we have cultural cachet in, and then turning them into something that is like fully transformative of what it originally was, and then making it something fun and interesting. So yeah, that's my point on public domain plundering, which I am kind of fully on board with. Like I have not seen a version of it that has been like porn parody level bad. Which has kind of been refreshing and nice. And I think it gives devs, like it gives a little bit of freedom, and you can get some tonal stuff in there that I think is, if writing or if world building, like if you want to make a grand a scale thing, but you don't have the resources or the time to do it, I think there's nothing wrong with taking something that exists in the public domain and kind of using that cultural relevance and turning it into something else, which I think is kind of cool. But I am here. I am at the good old the train station, and I'm ready to get going and start the day. So thanks for hanging out, and yeah, this has been fun. We'll catch you tomorrow on the next episode of Point to Point. But until then, have a good one. We'll see you later. Peace.